Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Roker Report podcast. Alex has pulled a sickie and is out of today's game with a little strain of flu. But fear not, myself, Graham Falk, will be stepping in to discuss yesterday's horror show here at the wonderful University of Sunderland Studios. Alongside me to chat about yesterday's game, rustle through our bag of three-word reviews and the future of Jack Ross is first and foremost our very own Paddy, who's making possibly his final appearance on the pod after getting a full-time employment as a journal. Well done, mate. How are you doing?
Thanks so much. Not too bad, yeah. I'm just looking around for places to live now in Aberystwyth. That's been a fun week so far.
Which is Wales, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yes. West Coast of Wales.
West Coast Wales. Secondly, I've got the Chronicle's James Hunter. How are you this rainy Sunday, James?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Drying out a bit after walking here.
And last but certainly not least, Sunderland Echo's Phil Smith, a man with a rather impressive music taste, I just believe. How are you doing? Are you all?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks very much.
Didn't expect that intro, did you?
No, I didn't. That's cheered me up. Yeah, that's made my weekend. Thanks very much.
So before we dive into yesterday's review, we do have our first competition winner of the show. This week, our friends at Football Bobbles offered one of our listeners a free Sunderland Quinn bobble hat, which is inspired by the legendary Irishman's contribution towards Sunderland's record-breaking promotion in 1999. It's also Quinny's birthday today. Did everyone know that?
Yes, I've seen about 85 tweets to that effect today. I don't know if I would have known otherwise, but he's been well celebrated the day after a defeat.
he's 53.
Funny that.
If anyone hasn't seen it yet, I posted up quite a rather good Lucozade video that he did in his Man City days, which is, for all intents and purposes, pretty shocking. But I'm pleased to announce the winner of that particular hat is at GavButler1980. So if you're listening, Gav, give us a wee message and we'll send you over a nice hat. And since it's raining, you're probably going to need it. So as for yesterday's review, after two impressive wins against Sheffield United and MK Dons, Jack Ross's Sunderland has reverted to type yesterday and put in arguably their worst performance of the season, which is saying something when you think back to the Bolton game only a few weeks ago. Sunderland started with an unchanged 11. O'Nien continued as a shadow striker. Charlie Wyke fought off competition from the returning Mark McNulty to remain in the striking role, and McGeoch and Power were given the chance to continue their partnership in the middle. However, whilst the side remained unchanged, the performance was absolutely nothing like last week's rather comfortable win over MK. I think right from the first minute, Sunderland was sluggish in possession, beaten to every second ball, and pretty much bullied all over the pitch. And it was no real surprise when Lincoln opened up the scoring after some really poor goalkeeping from John McLaughlin. If fans were hoping that would wake us up, we were severely disappointed, truth be told, as we continued to shirk tackles, couldn't get our foot on the ball, and didn't show any cohesion right throughout the side. So early in the second period, when Bruno Andrade won a penalty after torturing De Bock on the break, he missed it, but they did add their second shortly afterwards. Aidan McGeady losing the ball up high up the field, and then Sunderland failing to deal with another counter-attack, and it was a smart finish from Tyler Walker. And in the remaining minutes, we huffed and puffed, but pretty much we looked bereft of confidence, a plan, and any will, really. So all in all, pretty terrible day. So I'll start with you, Phil. What did you make of yesterday's performance?
Very frustrating, I think, mainly because not for the first time in the season, we've probably gone into a game with everyone feeling like we were inching towards a best 11, if you like, or certainly a shape, a structure that's fairly reliable, obviously accounting for the odd injuries and what have you, and the odd tweak. But that's, in a way, been the story of a season. Players who look to be edging towards top form, look to be finding the rhythm, look to be getting their place in the side, really not delivering. You look at the midfield balance that looked very good last weekend, very, very disappointing. Up front, didn't work, didn't hold the ball up, not a great deal of intensity. So that was, you know, really, really frustrating, because yet again, you go into this 2 week break and it's kind of almost back to the drawing board, if you like. And that was frustrating, because after the two games last week, you felt as if maybe a strongest 11, some partnerships were beginning to form, and all of a sudden they're in doubt again. And that, you know, no doubt the manager will take the heat for that inconsistency, and I'm sure he'll accept that. But, you know, it's frustrating watching the players from that perspective as well.
What did you make of it, James?
Yeah, well, obviously it's very similar to what Phil said. What's so frustrating, I find, is you have an unchanged side between the game down at Lincoln and the game against MK, and they deliver, you know, two completely different performances. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to that. You've got the same personnel playing in the same system with the same tactics. So I don't think that, you know, you could level criticism at Ross for tinkering with things or changing things unnecessarily. You know, you win a game, so you keep an unchanged team. So when that team, in my view, lets the manager down, then I think that, you know, that it's the players that need to look at themselves. Ross was quite scathing afterwards in his assessment, saying that the players didn't do the basics and the fundamentals right. And he accepted responsibility for that as the manager. But I put it to him after the game. I said, you know, a manager can accept responsibility for his selections and tactics and shape and what have you, but should the manager have to accept responsibility for players not doing the basics, not running around, not putting in the work, not putting in the effort? That shouldn't be something that a manager has to ask players to do. Players should do that off their own bat. So that's what I found the most frustrating aspect of the game at Lincoln.
And Paddy, did you go, Paddy?
No, I couldn't make it.
You didn't miss out, didn't worry.
I was, I don't know, it's just, I agree with what's been said there, because like the manager can't take responsibility for individual mistakes on the pitch. And I think when you look back at John McLaughlin's mistake, look at first time, and I think that their lad's got a touch on it, and I think, okay, he's beating him to the ball, he still should be doing better when he's not coming towards it. But you look at it again, and it looks like he's just literally got the ball and he's trying to get hold of it, and it's ended up over his shoulder in the back of the net. And you're there thinking like, yeah, okay, Ross is getting a lot of stick at the minute, you know, and obviously that was heaped on after yesterday's game, but he isn't responsible for who he feels is first choice goalkeeper for basically just carrying out mistakes like that. You just can't.
Just the basics, isn't it?
As a manager.
Just the basics, isn't it? And I think,
yeah, it's simple.
You know, you've all touched on how it is going to affect Jack Ross, and that's where the heat's going to lie, no matter what we look at and where we point the finger at. So I will go through our three-word review, which does have a theme running through it, which is Jack Ross-based, shall we say. The Hashpipe, 83, which is our lovely Sean, who might have a bit of a nightmare editing this because I'm terrible at sound, said, hit the road. I'm guessing he means Jack. Adam Fika said, Donald must act. Jake Collinson said, Jack's time's up. Mobile Macam, improvement not happening. Janie M, even I've turned. Gav said, not getting promoted. John K's Tractor said, where's Keane's number? Sean Gunner Graham, very average squad. Someone called Till I Die, I'm assuming that's Sunland, said Ross, Dross and Loss. And Craig Robinson said, regression, not progression. And rather funnily, David Rankin said 81 more points. So I suppose in a sense you can see that the heat has sort of turned up on Jack Ross. As I think he was under a lot of pressure anyway coming into the game, especially after that Bolton game. It feels like he's only ever 45 minutes away from people basically saying he can no longer be in the job, he can't continue with it. But James, you spoke to Jack after the game, and you've already sort of spoke about that already. He seemed pretty downbeat. He sort of admitted it was an embarrassment. There's a lot of talk around sacking him, but do you pick up a demeanour from him in particular that says, you know, maybe he'll walk away from it? His comments over the past few weeks just indicate a lot of unhappiness.
I don't get that impression. No, I think he's frustrated at the situation as anybody else would be. I think it's very difficult for any manager when you don't know what you're going to get from your players from one game to the next, and that's
what I was highlighting by the difference between the two performances in the last two games. I don't get an impression that he's ready to walk away from the job. I mean, why would he? The six in the table, 4 points away from automatic promotion. The biggest problem, I think, and I've written about it today, is that there's an impression out there, there's a feeling out there amongst some fans, not all fans, but some fans, that Sunderland should be walking this league. And that is setting up an unrealistic expectation, because this squad, this team, is nowhere near good enough to walk this league. And you only need to see the team in action to see that. It's not as though this is a squad of League One champions elect that's being held back by Jack Ross. This is a good League One team that's capable of mounting a promotion challenge, capable of winning automatic promotion. But there's the idea that Sunderland should just turn up at these places, be it Bolton, Lincoln, wherever, just say thanks very much for the 3 points and walk out again. It's a nonsense, and it's dragging the club back, because every time they draw a game, or obviously yesterday, I'm not defending yesterday's performance or result, not at all, but the point is, every time there's a drop point, there's a really bad reaction to it. It becomes a very hard club to manage. I've seen it here going back a long period of time, really. It can be a very difficult club to manage, and a lot of managers have come unstuck here. You know, in my sort of 20 years covering the club, there's been an awful lot of managers come unstuck here. And it just feels as though there's a bad vibe all the time at the moment. And even when Sunderland won 5 games in a row, that only quietened things down a bit. It only needed one bad result and everything came back again. 2 wins, as you spoke about, against Sheffield United and MK, that quietened things down. But it was straight back again, you know, after one bad result. And that's a really difficult situation for a manager to handle. And I just don't know how you break out of that cycle. I think that Sunderland are a decent League One team, but the idea that they are far and away the best team in this league is a nonsense. And you look back at the start of the season, Sunderland started off with 2-1-1 draws, one against Oxford, one against Ipswich. The first meltdown of the season was after that Ipswich 1-1 draw. Well, Ipswich are top of the table. They're still unbeaten. Here we are now in October. You know, maybe people should look back at that result now and think, actually, it wasn't as bad, actually, as people made out at the time. But at the time, 2-1-1 draws, and people were ready to sack Jack Ross at that stage. I don't know. It just doesn't seem sensible to me.
What about you, Phil? I think we've talked about Jack Ross's demeanour, and a lot of fans will use his demeanour against them. There's a lot of chat of his hands are in his pockets, which I'll be honest with you, that doesn't really matter whether he's shouting and screaming or not. But do you feel like, just in the past few recent weeks with his comments about fans and just his general demeanour, do you think it's getting to him?
I think for starters, he's always been, he's never really someone who's spoken in cliche or necessarily said what you would expect him to say in press conferences. He's always been a little bit like that right from day one. He's never been an emotive speaker. He's never been a tub thumper. And, you know, we would always say never too high, never too low. So I wouldn't read too much into that. But I think, quite honestly, it's been a difficult period for the entire club going back to the Wembley playoff final. And I don't think it's by design or malice, incompetence, bad leadership, anything like that. But since then, let's be honest, the club's been in a fairly permanent state of uncertainty since then. We've been talking about potential new investors going back best part of a year now. It was being spoken pretty publicly on the record as far back as March. You had a situation where Jack's going for a summer break and it looks like possibly Mark Campbell's coming in. I know Stuart Donald would say it wasn't that advanced, but there was a decent chance at that point he was going to come in. He was going to bring in John Park, who was going to run recruitment. He was going to be signing the players. Didn't happen. Now, subsequently, given some of the things that were Mark Campbell said about players who's going to sign, I think most people would say, well, maybe that was for the best. But let's be honest, that was a long period of the summer gone. Since then, same thing again. Protracted takeover talks. Understandably, you have owners who have to be cautious. They can't come out and talk as they maybe would like to, as would have at one stage. Absolutely no problem. The deal is dragged on a little bit. No problem. You've got to get the right deal. You've got to get the right people. Not a criticism at all. But it's created that element of uncertainty right throughout the club, and I think it has made Jack quite isolated.
Yeah,
I think it has made him isolated. I don't think it's been particularly easy for him to manage that. That's not an excuse for yesterday's performance by any stretch of the imagination. And I've absolutely no issue with the debate about whether he's improved the team, whether he has he's put in place and is selecting a team that at the moment is going to challenge for the top two. It's a perfectly valid debate, but it can only be one part of the debate at this football club. Because when you're in a situation where you've effectively been in takeover talks for the best part of 6 months, naturally that stops you driving parts of the club forward because everything is on hold. Okay, Sunderland still did transfer business in the summer. But it's very difficult to drive the club forward when there's that uncertainty. So I think there's a lot of questions for the club to ponder at the moment, for fans to ponder. Absolutely no issue with Jack being part of that. He knows the score. He knows some of the performances this season, particularly yesterday, weren't good enough. But it has to be in the wider picture of where the club's at right now. And you cannot underestimate the need for a bit of clarity and a bit of leadership off the pitch as well. And even if we acknowledge that there's reasons why it's been quiet on that from recently, it's not something that continue because it's a very, very difficult situation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Paddy, what do you think about Jack Ross? What do you make of his demeanour and his general past few weeks?
Well, it's interesting because I remember when he first signed, I remember like in the first few games, I noticed a lot of people comment on how he didn't really sort of like, he wasn't very commanding in his 6-yard box and he looked like quite a sort of a, people referred to him as like a sort of a cool customer. So at that point at the start, it was sort of seen as like a compliment. They said, oh, this guy looks pretty like calm and collected, you know, maybe he's like the, you know, we don't need like a big name guy to sort of take us back to where we want to be. But now obviously when the results haven't been going our way for the, you know, for the good part of a year, let's be honest now, like we haven't really been.
It's getting up to the year, isn't it?
We haven't been on a good consistent run and look like really bulldozing teams at any point in League One. And I think that's frustrated a lot of people to the point where this compliment of how he's like, looks really calm and collected and it's all of a sudden changed into, well, he's got his hands in his pockets or he's sat down in the dugout or he doesn't look bothered. So it's been interesting seeing that sort of change with the way that the team's been playing. I think obviously it's been touched on before that we had that run where we won 4 or 5 games, but it's in the back of your mind, like if there's one bad result, then all the negativity is just going to come flooding back in. So it's almost like you're waiting for that. I got the point where I feel like I'm waiting for that negative result because you think like it's going to come, you know, we're going to slip up against somebody who we're not expecting to slip up. Personally, obviously you look at the Bolton result, you know, a lot of people go into that thinking, oh, well, these have lost like 5-0 about 3 times this season. We should go and do the same. And then obviously it was bad getting through to half time and it's 0-0. Obviously when Bolton took the lead, sort of social media goes into meltdown and, you know, even with people were saying, then if we win this now, it doesn't matter. Obviously, you know, we got the point. We were very fortunate in the end. And it is hard to say because obviously you don't want to think about the negatives, but at the minute with the way we're playing.
They do exist, don't they?
Yeah, it just feels like we're always on the verge of just capitulating, you know, and we did it at Peterborough in the sense that we got, as well as the 3-0 defeat, we went down to 9 men. And obviously at Lincoln, you know, they sort of hit us with the sucker punch early in the second half of the second goal. And then you got like half an hour where it was flat really, you know, nothing was really happening. And it's just, obviously it's not the first time it's happened this season. It's happened a couple of times already and it is only October. So I don't think Ross will be, I know he's fully aware that obviously there's a lot of fans are now against him. And I think he came out yesterday and he said how he found the performance embarrassing, which I'm not sure if he said this before, but I found quite interesting because I've never really heard him be that emotive.
You always used to like, it's the first time I've heard it as well. And just to touch on that, he was, and probably Phil and James can probably remember this as well, last year, when we were going through that period of like drawn games, he was, I wouldn't say defensive of his players, but he protected them very much, didn't he? Sit and very much laid on the positives.
Well, that's why I found it interesting that you used the words sort of downbeat, or you didn't use the word defeated, but you know, that kind of implication from yesterday's press conference, because I did not get that impression at all. I don't know what James can get. For that exact reason, there's been times where Jack comes out for a press conference after a disappointing result and there's that sense that criticism's come in that he feels is unfair or unfounded or comes from the wrong place, whatever. But you know, yesterday there was none of that. Yesterday was, well,
like an acceptance.
What else are you going to say about that performance? Everyone can see it was rubbish. I didn't see him as particularly downbeat yesterday at all. I mean, I don't know what James thinks of that, but there was almost that. Well, yeah, okay. There's been times in the past, and I'll stand by what I said. But on this occasion, you have your days in football. You just got to take it. We didn't turn up, and you've just got to take it. And yesterday was certainly one of those. I think we're in a position now as a club. I mean, go round the houses about whether it's fair or not, and everyone will have their own opinions on it. Till Sunderland are in the top two, any negative result, any that's not a convincing win, is going to bring a lot of criticism for Jack. That's now a fact of the situation. We can go round the houses about whether that's fair or not.
Yeah.
That's where we're at. That's where, in a football club, you need really, really strong leadership, and that's what I was going back to. That's where you need real, real clarity on what your project is, where you're trying to go, where this blip fits into the bigger picture. Is it a serious issue, or is it a blip that you think you can ride out? What are you trying to do in the long term, and how do these results fit into that? And it's very hard to do that when you're in a situation where Sunderland are at the moment, where you're not quite sure what's coming next. And that's why, again, if there's a debate about the manager, it can only be one part of the debate, because at the moment, it's one part of a much bigger picture. And until we know of those pieces, you need to know all those things before you can come to a complete judgment about where the club's going. And maybe that's where, if I was the manager, I would feel a little bit frustrated. It was a difficult summer in a lot of ways. If we go back to when Josh Madger left the club, take it through the summer window, there's a lot of good players have left the club.
Yeah.
And there's some good players come in as well. But, from his perspective, I'd be looking at it and saying, well, okay, results and performances haven't been great this season, but I've brought in some young players at a good age. I've brought through some academy graduates, okay, with mixed results, but you would expect that. But we still don't have, as a football club, is that sense of where that fits in with the bigger picture, because there's still this uncertainty. And until that gets sorted, I think it's going to be very, very difficult for the club to drive forward.
Talked about, I've made no secrets on this podcast. I'm not a huge fan of him, but I'd very much take on board that he has. I'm pretty certain he would have had some sort of meeting with the likes of Mark Campbell, and that would have disrupted his summer and how he felt. But I think, it wouldn't be fair. And a guy on Twitter, Penshaw Macam, actually asked a really good question. How much of the blame should the recruitment team get for the current position as well? I mean, he's pointed out Richard Hill and Tony Courton having the final say on transfers. I think we've heard different opinions on that. But if you look at the players that have left compared to the ones that have come in, maybe it's too early to judge, but the likes of like Rhys James, Honeyman, Cattermole, Madger, Adam Matthews have all gone. And based on the evidence so far, are they weaker players than that we've let go? The likes of De Bock replacing James, Dobson replacing Honeyman, Ledbetter, Cattermole, Greg Madger, McLaughlin, Matthews. Has the recruitment team got something to answer for as well, do you think?
Well, that's a fascinating question, and a very, very fair question to ask.
Yeah.
My initial two responses to that would be, one, what level of funding has been available to replace those players that you'd mentioned? Most of the players there you're mentioning are players on
big wages.
It's a very big scale, so distorted a little bit. By and large, we're talking about established players, right, on decent money. If you look at the players who've come in since then, I'm not saying they've not... Some of them have come in for fees, Will Grigg being the obvious one. I'm sure some of them are on decent money and what have you. Has it been wildly bigger investment than, say, Peter Bingham and Mo Issa? Has it been wildly bigger investment than Fleetwood saying bringing in Paul Coutts from Sheffield United, who was part of the championship winning team? And to be clear, that's not a criticism. It's just me saying that it doesn't have to be a negative if you're being sustainable, if you're bringing in young players who you think you can build up your salon value. But recruitment's it's a fascinating question, and that's what I mean about this clarity, about what the club's trying to do, what's the model, what's the long-term goal. And it's a very fair question, and I think the kind of questions that moving forward are perfectly, perfectly valid to be asking.
What do you think, James?
I think a myth has been allowed to develop about the Sunderland having the biggest budget in League One.
I agree with that, absolutely.
This is a line that's trotted out, interestingly, never by the football side of the club. That look at the size of the budget. We've got the biggest budget in League One, and people therefore say you get what you pay for, and therefore Sunderland should be running away with the league. But to the extent that the budget side of it was true last year, that was a legacy cost of wages, and we've seen players like Lee Cattermole and Brian Oviedo depart. because they were unaffordable, and that's completely understandable. But look at the actual investment from the owners in the playing squad this summer. There's only one player arrived for any money, George Dobson. The rest of the signings were free transfers, loan signings. So the idea that Sunderland are somehow outspending everybody and you know, they should be leaps and bounds ahead of everybody is just not the case. I think that you make the point about the recruitment side of it and Tony Courton and Richard Hill. The Mark Campbell proposed takeover was incredibly close to going through last year, whatever anybody says. And there were people within the football club, within the recruitment setup, that thought they would no longer be here. And all of a sudden, when the takeover fell through, those people were told, actually, you are needed after all. And so they had to make a standing start on the recruitment. And that's kind of flown completely under the radar. People don't realise, a lot of the time when criticisms are made, people only have the slightest understanding of what's actually going on behind the scenes. And so you end up making a standing start to your recruitment. You're late to it. So other people have signed the players that might have been your first choice in certain positions. Obviously, the one big signing that the club has made under the present owners was Will Grigg in January.
Yeah.
A signing that hasn't worked on any level, but a signing that has only been a huge failure because of the sheer size of the transfer fee. And you'd have to ask why that much money was paid for that player at that point. And if it hadn't gone to deadline day without Sunderland bringing in a striker in January, then Wigan would not have been able to hold Sunderland to ransom. And so you need to ask why that's happened. I think that's the key question on that particular signing. But I think that, as I say, I think this squad is not much, if any, stronger than last season. But if that's the budget you've got to work with, that's the budget you've got to work with. You've got to try and bring in players that you think you can get something out of. Last season, Sunderland brought in Luke O'Neill, a player that I'm pretty sure no Sunderland fan or very few Sunderland fans would have heard of before he arrived here. But he's turned into and developed into a very, very good League One player, a player Sunderland could make a profit on if they wanted to sell him tomorrow. It might be that George Dobson is that player this season. You know, you have to give players a bit of time. We're only 11 games into the season. But I just think that overall, you need to have an appreciation of the budget that they're working to. And the fact that the uncertainty over the takeover, first the Mark Campbell one and now the MSD partners, which, you know, I know Stuart Donald says is not hanging in the balance, but he also said it was better than 50-50. Well, that wasn't as advanced as we'd all been led to believe. So you don't really know where these things are on the track. It's affecting everything, as Phil said. You know, new contracts for players, they're virtually at a standstill because nobody dare commit any money and players don't know what the plan is going forward. So at the moment, all these things combine and it makes a very, very difficult situation with what's going on the field. It's taking on the same shape off the field as well.
Paddy, do you think you could have been helped by the recruitment?
I think, no, I'm sort of in the same boat. I think if you look at some of the players who obviously we had last season and have obviously, you know, we look at most of them have sort of gone on to, I suppose some have gone on to sort of better things. I mean, look at Honeyman's become a regular now for Hull in the Championship. He's basically doing, you know, he's doing what he was doing last season, but you've got to think that, you know, he hasn't got the responsibility of captain. You know, he hasn't gone in there as like the local lad with the captain's armband, which is something which I never really agreed with. And I think that's what sort of helped him make up his mind to sort of move away from the Northeast and maybe sort of try and sort of kickstart his career somewhere else. But no, I think we have got a good League One squad as it is. I think it is just a case of a lot of people getting tied up in this idea that we do have lots more money than any other League One team to spend, because that's just it. In the end, that sort of rumour and that sort of idea, it's going to be harmful, because every week, you know, every 1-1 draw and every away defeat we have, you're going to have people coming away from the match thinking, oh, you know, like, we've got a bigger budget than them, you know, we should be smashing them. It's like, we haven't, you know, and even if we did, we haven't got that pulling power to attract the players to really walk the league like a lot of people think we should be. And I think it's just, it's a case of being realistic, and it's frustrating how sort of a year and a half into being in League One, there's a lot of people still haven't sort of adjusted to that. So I think obviously the recruitment hasn't helped with, you know, there's been other distractions elsewhere, but I do think that I honestly don't think we are much worse off, other than the fact that we don't have that striker, which we had in Josh Madger, who, you know, the team could play. I remember numerous games before Christmas last year where the team wasn't really turning up, but Madger was there to get a goal and we'd nick a win or we'd get a point. So it's just like, it's got the point now where we don't have that one player who we can rely on to, for that, you know, that quick turn, that little bit of magic just to like get us a result out of a game. And I think it's obviously further down the line, the fact that I think it's something like, since Madger left, I think about 4 or 5 strikers have got less goals than what Madger got before Christmas. I think that's really concerning. So I do think overall the squad does look okay. I don't think it's much worse off than last season, but it's the clinical finisher what we're missing, and we're really suffering for it.
I think we've discussed a lot about the things that have hindered Jack Ross, and just to kind of play the devil's advocate a little bit, and I'll come to you first, Phil. I mean, when you look through Sunderland's team, I don't think we're as good as we would like to be. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we're good enough to win this league, but surely a team with McGeady, Maguire, Power, McGeoch, McLaughlin, Willis, all players that pretty much, off the top of my head, most teams in League One would take, surely Jack Ross has got to be getting more out of them.
Well, certainly more than yesterday, and more than on a few occasions this season, so no problem with that. I guess what my retort to that would be, playing devil's advocate as well, is that, yeah, okay, you've got good players there, but have you got a good blend there? Have you got good variety there? And the question I would pose is, Lincoln's second goal yesterday, do you think Sunderland could score that goal?
No, not haven't got.
Well,
that
there
case.
We go then. So you've got good players, no doubt about it. Good players who, by and large, should be winning a lot of games at this level and be pretty competitive, which they are. But I think there's plenty of players in this league from other teams that I would take.
Yeah,
players with athleticism, players with pace. I would love Doncaster's Ben Whiteman in Sunderland's midfield. I would love Bruno Andrade. I'd love Tyler Walker up front.
Yeah,
Ivan Toney. So Sunderland have got good players. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. I'm sure any of those clubs would take one or two of Sunderland's players and love to drop them in their team. But there's plenty of other players from other teams as well that I would have in the Sunderland side. So I've got no issue with your point. I think Sunderland have got a squad that should be challenging this season. Absolutely no doubt about it. I don't believe they've got a squad that should be flying absolutely miles ahead in the division. Okay, maybe Ipswich don't either. Maybe they've also got a very good squad at this league, and fair play. They're delivering some really impressive results. Absolutely ruthless up front and at the back, and you know there's no doubt that the manager's responsible for that. But in response to what you're saying, I agree to a point. But yeah, there's plenty of other players I would have in this Sunderland team as well, and I think yesterday was a perfect example of that.
It's funny you mentioned pace and power. I think we've missed that for the best part of a year, maybe longer than that, haven't we? It's stretching back, and I guess it goes back to recruitment again, though, doesn't it, James? I mean, I don't know what you think about. Obviously, having the right kind of players, do you agree with Phil's sentiments that we need maybe some pace, power in the middle?
Yeah, I think that's pretty evident. I think what's interesting is the point that you just made about the players that Sunderland have got, Conor McLaughlin, Jordan Willis and Chris Maguire and whatever, that kind of puts the lie to the previous point you made about the recruitment team being no good. Only one of those two things can be the case.
It's not necessarily the
question that you're posing. That's what I was meaning. The point is, you know, if the recruitment's no good, then, you know, there wouldn't be decent players. I think Phil's right. There are probably in every team in League One, there's a couple of players that you would like to see in Sunderland's team. And there's probably 2 or 3 players in Sunderland's team that any team in League One, including Ipswich, who are flying at the top of the table, would take. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. It's not as though Sunderland have got a team of players that are capable of walking the league. They're a good team. They're a competitive team. They're a team that will challenge for promotion under Jack Ross if everything is left as it is. Will they improve on last season's position? I think they can. But you know, you can't just assume that Sunderland will walk away with this league. And changing manager now will not necessarily make any difference. It will not turn this team into a team capable of walking the league. You know, you might be able to get a little bit more out of it. You might end up with somebody that gets less out of it. But you won't transform the team by bringing in a new manager if that's what people are wondering about.
Paddy, I'll come to you with this one. Since we're on the subject of players, there's been a little bit of debate surrounding John McLaughlin. I don't want to write him off at all, and I think he is a very good goalkeeper, but there's definitely he's definitely not on the form he was last season, and there's been a lot of calls for Lee Burge to come in. Now, his mistake yesterday was probably his worst of this season, and he's made more than the first 11 games than he had the whole of last season. But would you replace him, Paddy?
I think at this point I would want to replace him, but it would be more for his own confidence. Yeah. Because I think he showed us last season that he is a good goalkeeper. And, you know, this season, I don't know what it is. It's just something, you know, it's psychological, you know, it's the mindset where he just hasn't looked like the sort of... He hasn't looked like the goalkeeper who arguably won us points last season with some of his performances. You know, cause there was times last season where he'd be kicking out efforts left, right and centre, and you've got to think, well, you know, you need support for this. You know, we can't just be relying on a above average League One goalkeeper to basically save us enough points to get in this top two when the sort of outfield players aren't really doing the job. But no, I think it's a good time, with there being an international break, to have a bit of a tinker with the team. And I think I would start with bringing in Lee Burge for the, I think it's Wickham we'll have next.
Yeah, Wickham in the league now. Yeah.
Just what you want, by the way, Wickham away.
Yeah, right now. They haven't lost a home game this season. I don't mean form, I just mean
generally.
Yeah. Were kicked off the park down there, weren't they?
Yeah, it was horrible that game, wasn't it?
Even
last year,
George Honeyman managed to lose his right.
I was minging that. It was horrible. What do you think, Phil? Would you bring in Lee Burge, or do you think that affects McLaughlin's confidence?
Quite honestly, no, I wouldn't. I don't think there's any doubt that John McLaughlin's not quite nowhere near the form he was last season. I still would counter that by saying I think there have been times where he's been good this season. I think back to the Rochdale game, the last 10 minutes, he was really good. Commanding his box. Portsmouth as well. I thought he finished the game well. So that's not to say that he's not made errors or whatever. It's blatantly obvious that he has. But I just think there have still been occasions this season where we've got a good goalkeeper. And honestly, I would like to get his contract sorted. Remove that away from him.
Yeah.
You've got the security that you need. You're here. You're our number one. And I think you might see an improvement in performances after that. With all these things, ultimately it's got to come down to the player as well. John, you speak to John, he is one of the best professionals you'll meet in the game. Really, really, really level-headed. Great speaker. Great person to have around. Does things the right way. Frustrating at the moment. There's no doubt that he's off form, but I would love to get that contract situation wrapped up. Give him that security. Put it back on him. Right, you're our number one now. Here's your contract. You know you're here. Go and get back to the levels we know you can produce, and I think you would maybe get a response.
What do you think, James? Do you think the contract situation may be affecting him more than we know?
I think it does. I think it's only natural it happens to players. It's just an uncertainty at the back of your mind, and it goes back to it feeds him back to what we were saying earlier about the uncertainty over takeovers, because that's what's proven to be the logjam. People don't want to make big decisions at the top, because they know that, you know, there might be a change of ownership coming. So I think that is a problem. But as far as the goalkeeping situation more generally is concerned, I would still keep John McLaughlin as my number one for now. That's not to say that I've got anything against Lee Burge, because I haven't. I think he's been absolutely fantastic whenever he's been called upon. I'm pretty sure you'll see him play against Grimsby on Tuesday night, so it'll be another opportunity. But I feel at the moment that almost Ross is on a bit of a hiding to nothing, whatever he does in any given situation, in that if he does make a change of goalkeeper, which is something that, as you say, there's a growing feeling amongst fans that he should do. So if he makes that change against Wickham and plays Lee Burge, and if Lee Burge makes a mistake, then it will be Jack Ross's fault, and what's he changed goalkeeper for, and so on and so forth. I do feel that he is in a bit of a no-win situation in any of these given decisions that he has to make. And it's a shame, really, but you know, ultimately he's the manager and he has to make these kind of decisions. But it does feel as though there are people willing to use anything, whether it's keeping your hands in your pockets, for goodness sake, you know, against you. If people don't like you and you have your hands in your pockets, that's why they don't like you. If he was waving his arms around like a windmill, that's why they wouldn't like him. Do you know what I mean? You are in one of those situations where people will find something to pick fault with, whatever you do. And the only answer for any manager is to counter that with results and performances.
It was quite funny going back to the Bolton game, talking about, because I'll repeat, I'm very much, I don't feel he's the right man, but I do feel at the same time some of the criticism he gets is pretty strong. Going back to the Bolton game, my girlfriend actually noticed he went to write a note on his leg, as you do, and bent over, and some guy kicked off and said, "Look at him, he's just looking at his shoes." To which we kindly pointed out he was actually writing a note to hopefully spur the team on to get an equaliser, but there you go. But yeah, I very much think there is that, and that actually brings me on to something I did want to discuss, and I'm not going to hide it at all. I think I'm going to ask sort of you first, Paddy, first and foremost. Personally, the abuse, and it was actually Mark Potter that brought this up, the abuse that some of the players and the manager have taken this season, Mark Potter said, has been absolutely disgusting. And I do agree with some of it, to be honest, that it's been terrible. You can rightly criticise where it's due, he says, but some of the personal comments in the grounds and social media is embarrassing to the rest of our fan base. And he specifically pointed out the situation with Tom Flanagan yesterday. Has everybody seen that?
Yeah.
I've not seen it. I'm aware vaguely of it, but...
Yeah. What do you think, Paddy? Do you think that it's just been a bit way too vitriolic?
Yeah, I don't think there's any need for that. I think, you know, Tom Flanagan, he divides opinion. I think there's going to be a lot more negatives.
Didn't even play yesterday, bless his heart.
That's the thing, yeah. You know, he's come out, he's seen that there's obviously people waiting for autographs. He's gone out and signed them. You know, like 95% of the people there are being, you know, like... obviously grateful that he's come out to sign, and then you get one person who just has to say that comment. They don't need to, but obviously someone's going through their mind thinking, oh no, I need to say this because, well, I don't even know why he's got to say it, because it's pointless. And all it's going to do is it shows up how bad some of our fans can be. Obviously not all of them, you know, it's all in these cases.
I think every club has that, exactly, that element, yeah. Doesn't it? And you hate to see it. And I think I do think there's a lot to be said for how well Flanagan handled it, because I'll be honest, I can't go into details, but that's not the first time Tom Flanagan's had to deal with something publicly. And I think he handled it quite well, but it's just not on, is it, Paddy, really?
It's just, that doesn't, I get that people want to vent their frustrations, but just shouting at a player who was an unused sub that day, who's come out to sign autographs and chat to people, it's just, I don't really see what that's achieving. And I agree. I think Tom handled it really well. I think if it was other players, might have, you know, approached the guy more and maybe given him the attention what he probably wanted. So I think it was fair play to obviously Tom for reacting how he did. But it's bad because, you know, it gets shared on social media, then more and more people see it, other supporters of other clubs see it, and it's just, it's not nice. I know it's a minority, but it doesn't look good when, you know, when you start having, like, fans shouting stupid things at players after a disappointing match.
What do you think, James? Do you think it's been a bit too far this season sometimes with certain individuals?
I think people just in general, not just in this football club, but I think people in general get far too excited and over I don't want to say take things far too seriously, but what I mean is people get so het up about things that they can't control, and the abusing players in that way, or on social media for that matter. It's just not acceptable. It doesn't reflect well on the football club, even though it's only a tiny minority of people that do it. And it certainly doesn't reflect well on them as people and human beings. And what I'd like to see is I'd like to see the 99% majority of Sunderland fans call these people out for what they are. That's what I'd like to see.
How about you, Phil? I mean, I wanted to make a point actually beforehand. What do you feel? There's been a lot of talking about Jack Ross, and a lot of it is Scottish this and Scottish that, which evidently I take offence to. But what do you make of the kind of, it's been vitriolic this season, hasn't it, a little bit?
I think it's just a society thing. I would always say where society leads, football follows. I don't think it's a uniquely Sunderland problem at all. I think it's a major issue right across our society, and to be honest, you know, our nation. It's
absolutely
so. So social media has created a climate where people aren't accountable for what they say. You don't even have to have an identity on social media to go out and say things that in any other walk of life would have serious repercussions. So, you can only condemn it. It's not a Sunderland issue. It's not a Sunderland fans issue whatsoever. It's a society issue. And until society gets a grip of it, football's going to have an issue with it.
I think it's really well summed up. I absolutely agree with you on that 100%. Away from that, sort of going back to, I suppose, Jack Ross again, which has sort of, I suppose, dominated this conversation, but I suppose it's going to, because it's on everyone's lips, isn't it? But honestly, I don't think anyone knows if Jack Ross is going to be in charge or not in charge the next game. But if he does remain in charge, Kieran Clark asks, how can he win back the fan base? And I'll pose that to James.
Well, you know, I've touched on it already, but the only way that a manager can shore up his position is to win games, and even in Jack Ross's case, even that doesn't always guarantee you a positive reaction. You also have to perform well as well. The team has to perform well. So that's, you know, in short, that's the fast route to doing it. I think the way that the fan base is now, and the way that social media and the criticism when it comes can be 24/7, it can snowball very, very quickly in a way that didn't happen in years gone by. You think back to when Alex Ferguson first took over at Manchester United and was not very successful in the early days, and there was a sizable amount of Manchester United fans that wanted rid, but he was able to ride that out. But would he have been able to ride that out now in this climate with social media and 24/7 and phone-ins every day of the week? I think he probably wouldn't. I think they would have pulled the trigger and he would have been gone, and that would have, you know, the whole shape of football would be different. I think that I've often thought, I think I wrote something a while back, you know, how would things have looked if we'd have had Twitter and social media when Sunderland were relegated with 19 and 15 points? I mean, back in those days, it was just the message board, which was a more niche thing. No, not everybody was on the message board. And then, you know, even when Howard Wilkinson was in charge, you had the Three Legends phone in. It was a limited channel for criticism, if you like. But now it's 24/7 constant, and that's what's so damaging about yesterday's defeat, because there's 2 weeks of this now, and I'm obviously there's a game on Tuesday, but that's not going to quieten things down even if Sunderland win and win well against Grimsby, because in the grand scheme of things that game doesn't really matter. It becomes very, very difficult to cope with that in this sort of current climate. And quite simply, the only thing that Jack Ross, there's nothing that he can say, there's nothing that he can do apart from win games.
What do you think, Phil? What do you think he can or should do, if possible?
No, it's the only way Jack can win people back is to get the team in the top two and show fairly convincing signs that they've got a good chance of staying there over the course of the season. And I've absolutely no issue with that either. I don't want to be covering Sunderland in League One for a third season. Do you know what I mean? I've absolutely no issue with the expectation and the pressure and the demand to get out of the division. And as I touched on earlier, the reality is until people feel as if they've seen enough to to have strong belief that that's going to happen, then there's always going to be that criticism to any negative result. I have no issue with that, and only Jack can deliver it by going on a long winning run. I guess the point I was trying to make today is that that's Jack's job. That's what he has to do now. But other things can help too. Clarity above. Get this takeover situation resolved whichever way. So that's all Jack can do. He has to deliver a run of wins, and they have to be with good performances to show people that they can stay up. And maybe some positive news above him would help as well. Maybe either way, I think clarity's going to be the main thing over the next couple of months.
Probably help the whole club, wouldn't it? A bit of clarity, not just Jack.
Absolutely. In any walk of life, in any industry that we work in, any job that any of us have, in any of our lives, uncertainty affects your performance. It stops you being able to plan effectively for the future. It stops you being able to perform at your best over a long period of time. Like I say, there's no malice as to why it's happened at Sunderland. It's just the way things have transpired. But that's where we're at. And yeah, that would certainly help. Allied, I would certainly concede with no more performances like the one yesterday and a few more like the one last Saturday.
What do you think, Paddy? What can he do to get the fans that are against him back on side, which seem to be more of a majority than a minority these days?
Yeah, I think with some people, there's probably nothing more he can do now. I think with some fans, I think they're so sort of Ross out that he could win sort of 5, 6, 7 games in a row, but they'd pick faults with every one enough to think that, oh, we can do better than him. So I think, yeah, it's hard for him at the minute because he just has to keep on trying to do his job and trying to turn around these results and make sure that we don't have any more Peterboroughs or Lincolns or Boltons this season, just to hope that we've sort of flushed those kind of performances out of the system. Obviously going into, you know, when looking at a few weeks ahead when you have like the, you know, everybody says that the game's around Christmas and obviously we have one less just before Christmas, with us not playing Bury, but you look at, you know, you've got the same sort of fixture build-up, and I think he's going to need Sunderland to be probably top two, I think, around that time, to really sort of start convincing people that, right, maybe it's just been like a really bad patch for him, you know, there's been something in the team which he hasn't been able to get right for a few weeks or a few months, but it's got to start now, and I think with this international break, obviously, we've got now, I just think it can go, obviously, one of either two ways. Either, you know, the speculation or, like, the rumours of, you know, is Ross going to get the sack? If they do come true, then it'll give us, what, a week and a half, a week, depending on when and if it happens, to get a new boss in. Or he has 2 weeks to sit down and think, right, this happened last time, we lost before an international break, but then after that, we came out and we actually got some pretty, you know, relatively convincing wins. So he's got to sort of go back and think, I need to do that again, but I need to make sure that it doesn't all just sort of go up in flames with one more game before the next national break or the next break in play. So he's got a long way to go to convince people, but I think it's as simple as the only way to convince those who want him out the most is to basically just sort of start getting his team playing better football and just winning games, really. I think it's just as simple as that.
We talked about clarity a little bit before, Phil. There was someone put a really good question in, Lorraine Roberts. Stuart Donald's been a little bit quieter than usual. I think we know why, because of the whole takeover thing. But away from the takeover, do you think, Phil, that if he wants to keep Jack Ross, and that's his man, even after yesterday's result, which a lot of fans are saying he shouldn't, maybe he should come out and back him a little bit, give a bit of stability where he can?
Possibly. I mean, I guess the point I was making wasn't so much about a public vote of confidence necessarily. Yeah.
More about the takeover, of course.
They can often be counterproductive, to be honest. So it's not so much about that. I guess the point I was more just making about is, you know, where the manager fits into the bigger picture of where the club wants to go to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, I would talk a lot about Norwich and when, you know, Daniel Farke went through his sticky patch in his first season. I don't think there was necessarily a public vote of confidence from Norwich, but there was a communication and an understanding of where he fitted in.
Yeah.
And even though at the times many fans would have disagreed with that. And, you know, he went on doing an incredible job. In another world, he might not have, you know, that's fine. But there was that understanding of where he fit in. So that's more what I'm getting at than necessarily him coming out and saying, I'm not going to sack Jack. Because to be honest, I'm not sure that actually helps anybody in the end.
Yeah. What do you think, James?
I think public votes of confidence are never a good idea, no matter how well-intentioned they are, because they set their hair running. As soon as an owner comes out and says something like that, people say, well, he's not got long left then, has he? You know,
Sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's counterproductive. There are things that Stuart Donald could do which don't involve a public vote of confidence, which would have the same effect. But I think that, more importantly, Jack Ross was Stuart Donald and Charlie Methven's appointment when they came in. So let's assume that they are close or closing in on selling the club. If they sack Jack Ross now, then that accepts that their time as owners has been a failure. They've picked the wrong manager, failed to get out of the championship, failed to get out of League One last season, and then have ended up sacking their man relatively early in the season. And I don't think that they'll want to accept that. I think they'll want to show a bit of faith and, stick by him. That's what I would do if I was in their situation. But, you know, I'm not them.
Paddy, what do you think?
I think, I agree with sort of what James said, how like it would be if they go away from the club with having sold it and then they've left sort of that the guy who they brought in has been replaced. I think that would be sort of, you look at it and it'd be like sort of a year and a half, 2 years where it's just that we haven't really made an impact on this club. So I think it'll be important for them. So obviously to probably stick with Ross for as long as they can. And obviously if they, once they've sold the club on, if the new people who come in, if they replace Ross, then they can sort of say, well, it was out of our hands. But I think obviously they'll want to, not so much save face, but just to sort of leave with that a bit more sort of credit in the fact that they've stuck with the guy who they brought in at the start of their sort of tenure at the club, who they thought was going to be the best man for the job. And, a lot of people might not agree that, say, after 2 years, if Ross hasn't left us in a better position as to when he came in as manager. But I think it will be important for, obviously, the outgoing owners to sort of, just to have that on their CV, just to say, like, well, we've come in, we've financially sort of stabled the club as much as we can, within our limits. And we've basically made the club an attractive prospect to take over. So we can sort of move on now, whether we are in the championship next season or not. I think they can sort of feel that Ross will still be there, but other parts of the club will be better off than what they left. So I think that'll be sort of, it'll be sort of a tick in the box for Methven and Donald, I think.
So I'm going to put you all on the spot a little bit, if I can. I'll go with Phil, as the other one I can actually see. You're Stuart Donald. Do you go ahead with Jack Ross, or do you change your mind and go elsewhere?
I would stick with Jack Ross, but there's probably plenty of good reasons why I'm not a football chairman. Look, I would stick with him. Look, I'm not in the business of. I've no issues with fans' opinions. It's why we get to do the job we do. It's part of the game. No issues whatsoever. For me, it's more about putting Jack into the context of the whole football club, and that's why at this point, I don't think it's a particularly sensible business decision. I don't think it's the right decision. So that would be my thinking on it. Personally, I like Jack. I still think he can get this team promoted. Others will disagree. I've no issue with that. That's just part of the game. But my very long-winded answer to your attempt at a snap question is that I would stick with.
No, very very measured answer, I think. James, what do you think?
I would stick with Jack Ross. I think that the club needs some measure of stability. Jack Ross has been the longest, well, the first manager to go through a full season and then start the next season for, you know, however many years since Steve Bruce was in charge. I think it needs some stability at a time when everything else is up in the air over the ownership and all the rest of it. I think that there needs to be some stability in there. As Phil says, some fans will have different opinions. Of course, you know, no managerial appointment is ever you know, universally welcomed, and no sacking is ever universally welcomed either. You know, there's always a range of opinions, but in my view, you've got to give somebody time to properly rebuild. Jack Ross was given a 2-year contract. It was a 2-year project, so, you know, I think that he should be at least given the opportunity to carry on at present. It's not as though Sunderland are mid-table, you know, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th and miles away. They are 4 points from the automatic promotion places, and I think that, you know, he should be allowed to carry on.
And finally, Paddy.
Yeah, I wouldn't really go, I don't think I'm much further out, really. I think if we get rid of him now, then we're going to have a new guy coming in with a squad of players which he can't have a say on until January. Nobody knows, obviously, what there will be to spend in January. Usually with Sunderland, you know, you look at the last couple of years, we haven't really been able to sort of push the boat out in the January window. And obviously just thinking back to, like, you know, when we had Chris Coleman, you know, that was obviously an even tighter financial situation. And, you know, you look at some of the players who we came out with, it wasn't great. So I just think I don't think it'll be particularly harsh on Ross for him to be sacked now. I don't think he should be, but I think it will be harsh on the new manager coming in to bring him in and just say, right, this squad of players has got us, and I'll say, 7th or 8th in League 1, we want them in the top 2. You've got to come in and do it, like, now. I think there's not many managers who would come in and thrive in that situation who are currently available. So I just think a bit of patience, not so much patience, but more just persistency with Ross and, you know, the squad which he's built is probably most important to this point. So I've got less and less faith in him, but I still think he should remain as manager for the sort of foreseeable future. But it just depends on sort of how I think you've got to sort of ask this question again around maybe Christmas. I think if we're still sort of 7th or 8th, and, you know, we're sort of like grinding out wins and then getting turned over by teams we shouldn't be, I think that's when the pressure's really going to be on. But as we've said before, we are still only basically a quarter of the way through the season. So there is still time. I don't think it's panic stations yet. It's just in the wake of such a bad performance, it's hard not to think about obviously replacing the manager.
So no one's up for Apollo Di Canio then, though.
Fair enough.
Well, just before you go, obviously earlier this week, we did announce another Rook Report giveaway. I was second of the pod. We're giving things away here, geez. To celebrate the launch of FIFA 20, we did team up with Game Sunderland to give away another copy of the latest game in the FIFA series. We had almost 500 entrants, which didn't really surprise me, to be honest. And I'm happy to announce the winner is @TomoSAFC. So congratulations with that. Please DM us with your contact details and we'll get that sent over to you. But aside from that, that's all for this week. Thanks very much to Paddy.
No problem.
James.
It was a pleasure.
You're very welcome.
And Phil.
Pleasure.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Rogue Report on all platforms if you haven't done so already. And enjoy your 2 weeks off from the football, apart from that leasing trade game on Tuesday.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free.
That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.